Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. The Game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Joe Rex Road deep into the coffee this morning and is just drinking it up right now for your viewing pleasure to watch. We appreciate those who have joined us on those platforms as well. Thanks to Matt Duchesne for joining us in the last segment. And speaking of the Nashville Predators, 102.5 The Game and T-Mobile have teamed up to help you continue the tradition with a hockey home gating party. And it's time to text into the game line at 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile hockey home gate. You can watch a weekend Preds game with the Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. Just text the word GOALIE to 615-737-1025. That's GOALIE to 615-737-1025. Now to enter, the winner will be contacted on Thursday, and you must be 21 or older to enter. Joe Rexroad now looking like Lord Voldemort here in the studio as well.
Did you put the AC on when you came in here, Elijah? You shave your face and you turn it to 40?
Oh, no. They manna from the heavens came down, and the AC was fixed yesterday.
Yes, yeah. So now it's just, I guess, breathing that cold air all over you.
I mean, it's either the air is cranked or blood has stopped flowing in my body.
It could
I'm
be both.
I'm a walking corpse.
Yes.
It could definitely be both at this point.
I'm freezing.
You'll be okay.
So if you're watching, enjoy.
Well, you know what gets your blood pumped up? College basketball. And we had some more of it last night here on the program. UCLA takes down Michigan in a barn-burning 51-49 game. Gonzaga absolutely destroys USC in a game they were in control of the whole time. Elijah, let's start with you on this. What did you think of the games last night, and what do you think of the Final Four now that it's officially set?
My biggest takeaway was, who on earth can beat Gonzaga? I mean, there wasn't a team in this field outside of Michigan, USC, that could defend the two-point area and the rim specifically better than those two teams and USC. I mean, teams only shot 41% from two-point range against USC all season long, and Gonzaga goes out there and shoots 57 and just runs all over them. I mean, Jay Billis said it best last night. They're probably the best passing and cutting team I think I've ever seen in college basketball. I mean, they're just on an absolute heater right now. And then the second takeaway is I never thought I'd say the words UCLA and underdog and huge underdog in the same sentence in March, but this is one of the more impressive, I guess, underdog runs that I've seen in a long time, because at no point during the regular season did UCLA strike me as even a contender or even as good. You know, I didn't watch many UCLA games this year where I thought they were even a good or a competent basketball team, especially earlier this month in the first four against an average Michigan State team that was up on them by 11 at halftime. And UCLA looked like they had no chance to escape that game. And they are somehow, with some divine intervention, in the Final Four.
Yeah. Michigan State doesn't box out on a free throw, and all of a sudden UCLA's in the Final Four.
Yeah.
And by the way, Jaquez played terrible last night, and they still beat Michigan. They're a
Sean
great
Juzang.
Story. Yeah, Juzang was unbelievable. I mean, it's a great story. Man, it's also a little bit of a charmed life when you look at Alabama's free throws and Michigan just all of a sudden can't make a layup for last 5 minutes of the game last night.
And playing Abilene Christian in the second round. I mean, yeah. It took a lot of, like I said, a lot of divine intervention for UCLA to be able to get to this spot right now. But they hit their free throws when it mattered. I mean, UCLA had an effective field goal percentage of 41.7% last night, which is horrific, and still managed to win the game. To get to the Final Four, because Michigan couldn't hit a shot. I think Franz Wagner went 1-for-10 in the game. No one could hit shots.
With the wide-open three air ball.
Airballing a wide-open three. Eli Brooks getting an offensive rebound underneath the basket. Yeah. Finds a way to airball it. And, yeah, it was a perfect storm of events to lead to UCLA pulling off that game last night. But the only explanation I have is March, man. That's it. That's the only thing. The only way I can explain it away, because you can't logically.
Well, the only way first of all, I do have hopes for Baylor. And like to your point, I mean, Baylor doesn't have rim protection, you know. But Baylor pressures the ball. Baylor maybe can disrupt them some. I mean, I'm trying to come up with reasons Gonzaga could be in a game here before it's over.
They just have to shoot with them. I mean, Baylor's the best three-point shooting team in the country, and I mean, it only took 15 attempts to hit 8 against Arkansas, and by the time they already hit their first few, I mean, they were running away with it. Arkansas made that run late, but, I mean, Baylor was still in control the entire time just because they shoot the ball so well. Against Gonzaga, you're going to have to shoot more than 15 threes to be able to keep up with them, especially if you don't have an elite rim protector. Baylor doesn't really have that. I mean, they're going to have to win in a shootout. That's the only way I could see them, I mean, pulling off a win against
Gonzaga.
Are
you surprised that USC didn't give Gonzaga a better game? Because from a matchup perspective, I mean, they've got some dudes on USC that can ball.
Yeah, I mean Mobley looked good last night.
Yeah, he was fine. And they've been a team that, you know, athletically I thought could be an interesting matchup with Gonzaga. And Gonzaga, really from start to finish, were just totally in control of that game.
Yeah. I mean, you look at other good two-point shooting teams that USC played in this tournament. Kansas is the best example. Kansas didn't make their living outside the three-point line this year. A lot of David McCormick post-ups, a lot of drives to the basket. Kansas made their living at the rim all season long. And USC beat them by 40 because they couldn't score on them. And USC hasn't had a competitive game all tournament long because no one could score inside on them. I mean, there was a reason this was the best two-point defense in the country. And according to KenPom, since they've started keeping data since, what, 2000? The best two-point defense of all time. And Gonzaga was getting layups. It wasn't like they were having miraculous finishes or getting Mobley in foul trouble. They were getting layups, enough to score 25 points in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Layups.
Now, some of that is when you turn it over and they get in – they get runouts, right? Some
that
of those
helps.
Layups
yeah.
were out of, and Suggs, by the way, made a bounce pass
between two people just in transition.
He's, are we sure? Like, I understand Cade Cunningham's the first pick, and he probably should be, and all that stuff.
He's going to be the first pick.
I tell you what, man. If I have the third pick or the fourth pick, and I have to settle for Jalen Suggs,
you're all
okay.
With it.
I think he's going to be dynamite. I think he does everything well. And he's got to get it. He's got to shoot better. But I don't. His shot is fine. Like he can be.
Yeah, that could be taught. I mean, he shoots well enough at the free throw line for you to be able to think that the 3-point shot can come along whenever he's not, you know, 18, 19 years old. That like that can come with it. It's a loaded draft.
He's something else.
Yeah, I mean, just pretty incredible. And now, I mean, it looks like Gonzaga is just on this unstoppable run. And you brought this up earlier, like UCLA. You kind of squeak by from Alabama. Alabama hits the buzzer beater and can't make a free throw the entire game. Michigan gets into a roll last night where they can't make anything. Like, they're right underneath the basket on some of them and couldn't hit a shot. And UCLA has somehow found their way here. It just kind of feels like to me that they've gotten a little lucky to get here and that Gonzaga is about to just totally destroy them.
Well, and I just think, I mean, Elijah, you brought up Baylor hitting threes. This is why I really wanted to see Alabama Gonzaga, because just on the one night that Alabama just goes nuts, that could be interesting, right? The way they play, that could have been interesting, and we won't get to see it. Hey, maybe I'm wrong. UCLA's got a certain toughness about them. They find a way, and I mean, they're certainly more talented than I realize, and Tiger Campbell was great last night.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he can, you know, go toe-to-toe with Suggs and
It would take a lot defensively. UCLA's defensively wasn't their strength this year, even though they did hold Michigan to 49 points.
But they were really good last night. They were perfectly connected.
I mean, literally at the right time. I mean, they've found a stroke of luck and some type of team chemistry they just haven't had all season long. This is what makes this whole event, you know, so great and different than anything else.
We'll continue this discussion on the other side and take your thoughts on our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Now that the Final Four is set, what's your interest level in this Final Four compared to maybe tournaments as of years past? Let us know at 615-737-1025. Hey, 1025 The Game is kicking off every weekend with some free beer. And who doesn't love free beer? Make sure you're tuning in all day Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. We'll have that opportunity coming up for you at 9:45 here on Robbie and Rex Road on Friday as Joe Rex Road punches the mic. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join 102.5 The Game tonight from 6 to 7 p.m. for Smashville Live, featuring Preds players, former players, and other special guests. Tonight it will be myself, Hal Gill, and former Nashville Predator Darcy Hordachuk. So a lot of fun tonight coming on Smashville Live. Watch the show online via 1025 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. During the show, make sure you're looking out for the keyword to text in for a chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Dallas Stars at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow night. Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the NCAA tournament. The Final Four is set with Houston and Baylor, Gonzaga and UCLA, and asking the question, where's your interest level in this Final Four compared to years past? Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris in Nashville texts in, says the Michigan loss was very disappointing. It was worse than the Vols in Oregon State. Gonzaga is Duke West.
Wow. Duke West.
I like it. Has a ring to it.
First team ever with five straight 30-win seasons. You know, we're about to get into the the arguing about Gonzaga's place phase of the discussion, right? I mean, I think they're going to win two games. And already, like, I'm already thinking back to, like, Wolken. I need to go on Twitter and just shame him. Not close to Villanova.
He needs to get educated.
That's ridiculous.
You know what that tells you, though? That he hasn't watched this Gonzaga team all year long. That really is all. That's all it says. That Villanova team was great. I get it, and I'll be the first one to tell you. But if you don't think the Gonzaga team's on the floor with them, you just haven't watched, and it's still a little lazy.
I mean,
you
bring Nembhard off the. I mean, they've got everything you need, and again, those three guys are. They are. That's one of the best trios I've seen in college basketball.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, my interest level might be there because of sports betting, and I had the Zags winning it all in my bracket. If any of the games are during the Preds game on Saturday afternoon, I'll probably find a TV in Bridgestone to check out the scores. But other than that, not too interested. But what would the show look like if UCLA beats Gonzaga? Does that increase your interest level? That would detract from my interest level. I want to see Gonzaga-Baylor at this point.
Yeah, I do too.
I've had a lot of fun with the tournament, and I've loved the upsets. But right now, I really want to see Gonzaga-Baylor. It's been trending that way all year long. That's all we talked about at the beginning of the season, that those were the two best teams. I want to see Gonzaga-Baylor in the championship game.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I do think back 30 years, and this is something that I can think back on and you guys can't.
That is true.
Or at least not consciously. But that Final Four.
We can't think back at all.
Not even consciously, no. I think, for the both of us.
What year were you born?
92. I'm 28, man.
Oh, crap, that's right. That's right. Vinken was born in 89.
Yeah.
And you were born in what?
95.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, buddy, come on.
Get out of my face.
The last time UCLA won a title.
That's a good point. Toby Bailey. Ed O'Bannon. That Final Four was the last team that – well, I shouldn't say that. That's not the last team. Obviously, the Kentucky of 2015 probably should have also finished undefeated. Unbelievable team. But that UNLV team went undefeated all year. And the year before, they blew out Duke by 30. That Final Four, it's crazy because Duke back then was like the lovable team that we all rooted for to beat mighty UNLV. That game was incredible. But again, that was Duke. That was still a great Duke team that had been to the Final Four. I think they were one seed. It wasn't like some crazy thing. If UCLA pulls this off, I agree. Like, it would be insane. It would be wild on its own. But I want to see the best possible game.
We got robbed of Baylor and Gonzaga in December, too, because of COVID. So it'd be nice to get that at the biggest game of the year, like the national championship.
And yet again, it's amazing that we're having this discussion. It's about Gonzaga and Baylor all year, and it could be that again in the title game. And at one point this year, there was discussion. Yeah, Gonzaga and Baylor, but you better watch out for those Vols, man. Tennessee right there with them. They're the third team.
They were. People talked about that. People talked about Michigan as a third team. Other teams have been thrown around there. Yeah, but I know, especially with Tennessee. But again, with Tennessee, you have to understand, it's like UCLA is here. They're the underdog, the 11 seed. They're also the team with the most championships, and we think of them as John Wooden. Well, the Vols ran into the modern-day John Wooden. So you have to keep into perspective.
Wayne Tinkle. Once that train gets rolling, you can't stop it.
Yeah, the Tinkle train.
Yeah. You know, you're Houston.
The Tinkle sometimes becomes just a stream of losses for opponents.
A stream of made baskets by your opposition.
That was bad stream of consciousness. Okay, so rank. All right, I am more excited The women's Final Four is Friday.
Sure.
5 o'clock, South Carolina, Stanford. 7:30, Arizona, UConn. I hope Arizona can hang. I don't know. I'm not. But South Carolina, Stanford. I think I'm most excited about that game among the four games this weekend.
It's probably your national title game.
It probably is. Although I somehow feel like Geno is just going to be charmed into another title.
Which I want no part of. That I have no interest in watching UConn.
Well, but
winning
that's
another
but
title.
That's the interest in the final. You know, like for a lot of people, it's hate watching UConn. It's not like UConn in some of those years where it was just like a foregone conclusion.
Right.
They should have lost to Baylor. By the way, so Paige Beckers and Jalen Suggs. I did not realize this. They were high school teammates, or they were just friends.
They were really close. I don't know if they went to school together, but they were really like close friends growing up.
They're both really good.
That's pretty ridiculous. Yeah, that's some serious talent. But yeah, South Carolina Stanford is that's a great game. So that might be the best one of the. I mean, the semifinals. Of course, you always watch. I always watch Final Four. I'm always excited about the Final Four. I think Baylor Houston, if you like defensive basketball, will be fun. Like if you enjoy defensive, if you dread a college basketball game that's like 58-56, you might not want to watch it. But I think it'll be good.
Oh, it'll be a dogfight. I mean, those are two of the toughest teams, you know, that were in this entire field to begin with. There's a lot of watchability in that one too. And of course, with the way Baylor shoots the ball, it could end up being a blowout if Houston's forced to keep up. But I could see that one being close and at least being fun. And even if it is like a game in the 50s and it's down to the wire in the last minute, I think people would rather see that, you know.
I would agree. So let me ask you this. We talked about Gonzaga being undefeated, now 30 wins on the season. They're two games away from finishing this thing off. And you've had, obviously, a different year with COVID, and it's been largely conference games up until this point leading into the tournament. But when you factor in everything, when you factor in that they have a chance to do something in this sport that's not been done in a long time, and they've done it through the circumstances of a global pandemic, could this be the most impressive run that we've ever seen in college basketball? What if they finish it off?
See, one thing that people will say is, gosh, maybe if they would have played all these tough games that were scheduled, they wouldn't be the undefeated team right now.
That's why I ask.
And maybe. I think it's certainly fair to bring up the pandemic and everything, but again, that's like everyone has dealt with that. All I know is I think they will deserve if they finish it off to be discussed with the great teams of all time. And I know that some people are going to wrongly argue against that because of their conference, and I just think that. People are sleeping on how talented this team is. Some of these arguments get helped or hurt later with how guys do in the NBA. That's the reality of how it is. I mean, the Kentucky team of 15. I mean, that was a loaded team that lost to Wisconsin in the national semifinal. If they would have finished it off, I don't think anybody would have argued, right?
Mm-mm. I think that would have been indisputable.
Yeah, right. So, but I think this team it's one of the best college basketball teams I've ever seen.
Yeah, the margin of victory has got to be taken into account, too. Like, yeah, they play in the WCC. The WCC, which is better this year than it was in most seasons, but it's like they are winning games by an average of like 17, 18 points. I mean, in this tournament run, too, I mean, they've won four tournament games, and none of them were closer than 16 points, and that even that 16-point win wasn't even that close.
Right.
I mean, the last team to do that going up to the Final Four was 2004 UConn, and that's widely revered as one of the better teams of the last 25 years. So I think it's a similar thing. It's when you do play a weaker conference like Gonzaga does, style points have to be taken into account, and they have had no shortage of that all year long. They have just run teams out of the building all season long. You just haven't even been tested. That's the most impressive thing to me, is even when you're playing a team that's 20 points worse than you are, a Pepperdine or a Santa Clara, they usually always on a random weekend in January or February give somebody a team or a game, and they'll upset them. That happens in every conference.
Yep.
But when you run through your conference schedule, and none of your games are close, even the game that you're down double digits in the second half in the conference championship game, you still win by like 15 points. I think that speaks for itself.
It does, except you know why a lot of times you lose those games? Because no sport is more impacted than college basketball is by crowd, and
yep.
It wasn't part of it this year. Not really, right?
Not really.
So that's the argument against it. They didn't have these crazy packed arenas that normally you have to when you're Gonzaga, everybody wants. And now, I mean, year after year they've done it before in the WCC and been fine. But also, I mean, look, if you're a major conference fan, you say, okay, put them in the Big Ten and tell me they're going undefeated. Put them in the Big 12 and tell me they're going undefeated. In a regular year, playing packed arenas, going to wherever, going to Allen Fieldhouse and all that. You know, I mean, and I get it. I mean, I think that's fair to bring up. But if you're them, all you can do is play what's in front of you.
Going back to the question of the interest level part of this Final Four discussion, at Sly Guy Design on Twitter says, out of 10, I'm probably a 4, and that's only because of sports betting being allowed in Tennessee. That has been a popular response. Sports betting a big factor. People hating on college basketball.
They hate college basketball. They love gambling.
That's right.
Put them together, you know, it's like peanut butter and chocolate.
That's right. When we come back, we'll be joined by Adam Vingan from The Athletic. We'll get into the Predators a little bit more with him. How sustainable is this turnaround from the Preds, and how does it affect what they do at the trade deadline? All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. What a jam to come back from break with. And with that in mind, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Adam Vingan from The Athletic. Adam, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
One thing that I am not is a PIMP.
That's right.
So I appreciate it, Elijah, but that's going to qualify. That's not apply to me.
Still a nice jam from back in the mid-2000s. A little 50-cent action. There.
Yeah,
I love it.
Don't ask how that popped into my head, but I was just like, you know what? This seems fitting.
That's right. That's right. Well done, Elijah.
It's because Elijah and I are very excited that our Saints are coming to town for Week 17.
Yeah. Are you a big fan of the 17-game NFL schedule? Rex Road hates it. I think he's like violently angry against the NFL.
I don't know if I have an opinion one way or the other, but before the Saints came to town like once every decade, and the one time they were here a couple of years ago, I wasn't able to go. So I like the 17-game schedule this year. Because it means I can see my favorite team within 10 minutes of my house.
I mean, just wait until Taysom Hill is sailing 10-yard outs by 5 yards per. It's going to be amazing stuff, man.
Yeah, for his first incomplete pass of the game after throwing 300 yards. Yeah. And the Saints are up 2 touchdowns.
Give it back to him. I like it. There we go.
Yeah, so you're a Taysom. Yeah, you believe in Taysom Hill as a starting quarterback?
Who wouldn't?
I'm going to believe in whoever they put back there.
I think it's going to be Jameis. I think it's going to be Jameis.
I think it's probably going to be Jameis, too. So we'll see what happens.
You better hope so.
On that front. Adam, another win last night for the Nashville Predators. 6 wins in a row. They won 8 of their last 9 and continue to play good hockey, continue to win games, and have gotten themselves back into a playoff race here. In your mind, as you watch this team play, how sustainable is this moving forward?
Well, that's the question. Certainly, you have to be encouraged by a lot of what you've seen over these past couple of weeks. You know, I go back to 2 games against Florida. I go back to the last game against Florida right before they left for that 8-game road trip, and I think about the one loss they've had in this stretch, a 2-0 loss to Florida, where the Predators were dominated from start to finish. And, you know, you wonder to yourself if, you know, this team is what it is. If it's a mediocre team that's going to miss the playoffs, but then all of a sudden, they're right back in the race. They're, you know, a big win last night. You know, Chicago won last night, I believe, and Columbus won too. So the race is tightening. And, you know, when you look at what has caused this run, at least statistically, you know, of course, number one is goaltending. You know, UC Saros and Pecorine have been playing incredibly well. And you know, regression at some point is likely. You know, that doesn't mean that all of a sudden they're going to become below average goaltenders, but they're not going to be saving 96% of the shots at 5-on-5 as they had been before last night's game in the previous 8 games. So what I've really liked about this run in particular is, you know, you can tell that there's, you know, a certain commitment to work ethic on the ice, and John Hines has talked about that a lot. But what's interesting is that early in the season, I don't think it was as much of a problem, and John Hines talked about how the team has been working hard, and we could see that the team was working hard, but they weren't winning. So oftentimes when you mention work ethic when a team isn't winning, it's dismissed as, you know, moral victory. But then when they're working hard and winning, you talk about they're buying in,
right.
They're committing, you know. So it's funny how things can change like that. But, you know, you see a very hardworking team. You see a team that has renewed confidence. You know, they've dusted themselves off. They've won a lot of games in a row. And, you know, I think we're all surprised. I mean, I didn't expect this to happen. I will be the first to admit it. I mean, I wrote them off 3.5 weeks ago. So I'm happy to eat crow, you know. But it just has to be, you know, no earlier than 10:30 because I'm intermittent fasting now.
Nice. Oh, wonderful. What are you intermittent fasting for? Come on.
It sucks. Let me just tell you. It sucks.
I mean, that's stuff I need to do. And thank you, by the way, for not using the word culture as you talked about buy-in, as you know. One of my favorite sports terms. So, Adam, we've been talking a lot on this show about Ellie Tolvanen. And I actually went back and called up my love letter from Gangneung, South Korea, 2018. It's holding up a little bit better now, although, you know, he's still obviously the idea that he's like the trade deadline acquisition back then. I mean, obviously he was not ready. He was not ready for a couple of years. It was like kind of framed like, gosh, last chance for Tolvanen going into this year, kind of, right? How surprised are you by what you've seen, and what do you what are we seeing with him? Like, what is this the beginning of?
Well, I think I'm slightly surprised by how productive he has been. Certainly, we expected him to contribute at some level, but I didn't expect to see him contribute at this level. And you know, we've had a ton of conversations about Ellie Tolvanen over the past couple of years, and you know, as a society, we have grown accustomed to instant gratification. And the idea of having to wait for anything is just so unappealing. Like, you don't have to get off your couch to order something from Amazon or to order a pizza. Like, you can just sit there on your big fat butt, like I do sometimes, and just get what you want immediately. But I think what's been so exciting and satisfying to watch about Ellie Tolvanen in this season is that it didn't happen immediately. It required him to take the time to learn how to be a more well-rounded player. It required him to spend basically two full seasons in the American Hockey League. And, you know, now that patience and hard work is being rewarded. And I think another thing that we tend to lose sight of, and I mention this a lot, is that we've been talking about Ellie Tolvanen for so long that we think that he's this, you know, 23, 24-year-old player. He's only 21. I think he turns 22 next month. So he's still an incredibly young player who has not entered his prime. And I think what we're seeing is just the fruits of all of the hard work that he put in the minor leagues. And what are we seeing? You know, I think we're seeing the emergence of a player who could be a top six fixture for this team for years to come. You know, we're seeing a very well-rounded player. He's not just scoring on the power play. He's making big plays. You think about his, you know, think about a lot of the big plays that the Predators have made recently. He's had a hand in a lot of them. You know, you think of the goal that Roman Josi scored on Sunday. I mean, he had the primary assist on that play. You know, he's doing all of the little things. He's blocking shots. He's doing things away from the puck that we didn't think he might be able to do. And, you know, I just think it's been really satisfying to see Ellie Tolvanen come into his own after putting in the work for so long.
Adam Bingen from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Adam, I think the picture was pretty clear in terms of the direction that the Predators needed to go a couple of weeks ago when it comes to the trade deadline and being a seller at that point. How complicated, in your view, has this picture now gotten for David Poile as they move forward here?
Well, I just got a DM from Stillman who's arguing with my take, I assume, on Tolvanen. So, anyway... he's always listening. It's like Big Brother's watching you.
That's right.
So it does make things complicated. You know, we talked about a softer sell last week. This idea of maybe not trading someone like Matthias Ekholm, but still trading the likes of Mikael Granlund and Eric Halla, you know, Brad Richardson if he's healthy, all of those things. So I get the sense from Predators fans, and I think you've also probably sensed it taking calls and texts on the show, that I think there's this sense of dread of Predators from Predators fans who are happy that the team is playing well, but nervous that it's going to, you know, lead the front office to have this false sense of security that they don't need to do anything to look towards the future. They should go for it one more time. And I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I do think the front office is being realistic about this. And maybe they don't sell the farm as they did, you know, as we thought they might have a month ago. But I still think it's important for them to look to the future, because I agree with you, Robbie. You talked about this the other day. At the end of the day, for as exciting as it is for this team to be winning, it took 8 of 9 to get them right above 500. Like, that's how big of a hole they dug themselves. And I don't look at this team and see a Stanley Cup champion. I see a team that could easily get into the playoffs, but I don't see a team that's going to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round or the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round. You know, I think that's what has to be kept in mind when this team is thinking about what it's going to do over the next week and a half. If they want to hold on to a player that they might have traded, you know, namely Matthias Ekholm, I could see that happening, and I wouldn't fault them for that. But, like, if they don't do anything, like, if they just stand pat, don't sell off any assets, I think they'd be making a mistake.
What's Jared's argument? Is he saying Wayne Tinko would be better than Tolvanen on the power play? What's the?
I think his argument is that I only glanced at the DM because I was on the phone with you, but I think it was something to the effect of if the Predators believed that this was capable, if Tolvanen was capable of this, they would have let him play at the NHL level earlier, like Dante Fabro, and let him work through his mistakes at the NHL level as opposed to keeping him in the minor league.
Your reaction to this, Robbie?
Sometimes you just got to let people develop at their own pace at the minor leagues. I think it's worked out okay for them so far.
Robbie doesn't want to get in fights with Jared. He makes me do it all the time.
I get in fights with Jared all the time via text.
Okay.
The key is
good.
You've given Jared your phone number. Jared doesn't have my phone number.
Exactly.
He just DM'd me.
Adam is totally keeping people away. That's how you got to do it.
I'm going to text him your
just
number
right
now.
Remove access to the
you
phone.
You better not, Rex.
That's right. Adam Vingan from The Athletic has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex. Adam, great stuff, brother. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Absolutely. We'll come back and continue the conversation on the Nashville Predators, react to a little bit of what Adam had to say there, and take your thoughts on our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game.
Honestly, there's been way less conversations. That's a factor in how we're playing to moving into a playoff position, and it's also from some of the other teams that are maybe were more bullish. They haven't. Some teams haven't played as well. You see a lot of teams just sort of sitting in a position of they could make it. They may not make it. You know, it'll be really interesting to see what happens in these next 2 weeks. Like I say, you have between say 6 and 7 games remaining to play. You know, somebody going to want a streak to be very successful in the next 2 weeks, or are they going to lose games? I think it's really up in the air as to what's going to happen at this trading deadline, because it's not as active as I think some people think it is, based on what I read in the media, especially the Canadian media that's trying to I think create stories about the trading deadline.
That was David Poile, Nashville Predators general manager, on yesterday with Darren Donica Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. He joins them every week, every Tuesday at 11:15 here on 102.5 The Game. What did you think of those comments there, that conversations haven't been quite as active as of late, and maybe the deadline as a whole not quite as active as some as in the Canadian media have made it out to be?
Darn Canadian media trying to pit teams against each other.
Nice.
Well, I think that's a quote that's ripe to be overreacted to, right?
Yeah.
But it was a good point on some of the other teams on the other side, their positions have changed for the worse here, too. Something worth keeping in mind.
Taking your thoughts on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And it is time to save cash fast with Nashville's best deals.
Go to thegamenashville.com right now to get half off a $20 gift card from Grain and Berry in Hillsboro Village. Grain and Berry is Nashville's superfood cafe where healthy meets delicious. I think it was interesting to hear from Matt Duchesne earlier in the show talking about the forecheck and trying to go a little bit into detail there of exactly what it's like with your first forward crashing in and your second forward needing to be aggressive from that standpoint too, and how maybe at times last year and the early part of this year, there wasn't a good trust level there between the forwards of knowing who's going to be the F3 and hang back and knowing who's going to come in and pounce like that. It seems like they've found that balance now. They've found that trust level. And as Adam Vingan pointed out in The Athletic yesterday, and as we've talked about here on the show, the forecheck right now, pretty relentless from the Predators, and they turned it on once again last night in the third period. That's been, I think, a huge part of why they've been as successful as they've been as of late.
And has to be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it really has to be. Duchesne, it's interesting, his comments, I mean, he's kind of been consistent, I feel like, throughout the year, talking a little bit about that just play, don't overthink, or he said today, don't work the game, I think, right? Sort of the, if you have the chemistry, if you have the trust, then you go faster, you're somewhere a split second faster, you move the puck to the place a little bit faster, and you have opportunities out of that.
And you can play aggressively.
Yeah. And again, you trust that, like you said, the F3 is going to cover your back if needed. So, but he's kind of been talking about that all year, the you know, aggressive instinct
game playing the
versus
game.
Playing.
Rather than thinking. I mean, you know, I think he used the term loose to describe the way you're playing. Not in terms of structure being loose or anything like that, but just kind of freeing yourself up to go out there and play. And I think there has been a little bit more of that. John Hines has used the term buy-in. And he talked last night after the game about, you know, just how you go through video, you highlight some things, and you look at other teams. Like Tampa Bay, they play a certain way to win. Now, obviously, they've got an incredible amount of talent on Tampa Bay, and that's going to win you a lot of hockey games. But there is a structure that John Cooper has put into place. There is a structure that Rod Brind'Amour has put into place in Carolina that allows them to be successful. They play towards an identity. And I think the Predators, right before the road trip, they talked about that, how going through video, there was really no identity, and there was really not a buy-in or at least a consistent commitment level to playing the way you need to play. And now it feels like they found that. Now, how much of that is the young guys coming in and kind of rubbing off on some of the veterans? I don't know, but it feels like they found that. And that's why, to me, like, we talked about goaltending, those numbers are going to come down. Like, you're not going to operate at a 5-on-5 save percentage of, like, 96%. Like, it's just, it's going to come down at some point. But that, to me, is an area of your game that should not change. It should not be something that wavers from here. Now that you've found it and you know that that formula works for you, that should be something you stick with and commit to if you're the Predators.
If I don't get this shout-out in, I'm not going to be welcome back home today.
Okay.
So Caroline Rexroad is winning, that my 10-year-old daughter is winning both pools she's in. She has UCLA winning the whole thing.
Wow. That's a good
now,
call.
There is a caveat.
Okay.
Because this is sort of the weakness of the where you do the play-in game. Now, we know who UCLA played in the play-in game, right?
Yeah, Michigan State.
So really, she kind of had Michigan State winning, but she has UCLA, and actually in her other pool that she's winning, she has Gonzaga winning it all. So multiple brackets winning one family pool, one friend pool. So shout out to you, Caroline.
That's impressive. Very impressive. More impressive than you and I in this competition, that's for
that's
sure.
That's Wayne Tinkle levels
that is
of
Wayne
excellence
Tinkle
right there.
Excellence.
That's Robbie Stanley and Preds Pick to
Come
Click
on.
Levels
right.
of outstandingness.
On a roll. By the way, tomorrow, 8:45, be there. Preds Pick to Click. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. I've got one, finally, and we're going to start a roll here. It's going to be going. Elijah's pumping everybody up. We're ready to go here on the program. That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rexroad. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. You are listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game.